buzzer beaters, and this is Eddie Aparicio, and I'm joined by my co-host Anthony Tuan Corral. This is a podcast that is dedicated to basketball, with an emphasis on the NBA. Buzzer Beaters is a property of GremlingsMedia.com. You can find Gremlings, find Buzzer Beaters at GremlingsMedia.com, Rumble, YouTube, under the profile Gremlings Media, as well as your traditional podcast outlets such as Spotify, Google, Apple, and Pandora. You can also find us on Facebook and X, formerly known as Twitter. If this is the first time you're seeing our show, the format of our show is that we pick topics. We typically pick 2 to 3 topics in the last few weeks, sometimes 4, but our intent is to cover about an hour's worth of content. And sometimes, well, lately we've been going a lot overtime, right? Our intent has been an hour. We're going like an hour and 30, hour and 40, hour, you know. So we're trying to get to an hour. That's going to be a goal for us in this.
Well, in fairness, we're trying to cover all the teams before the draft, and that's
exactly.
We're elongating the time. So,
Exactly. Yeah. But so for this week, we're actually going to have 3 topics. So the first topic that we're going to cover is remembering Jerry West. Jerry West just passed away on the 12th of June. And, you know, this comes after about 16 days after Bill Walton just passed. So we, the NBA community, have lost 2 legends over the last 16 days. And then as of the airing of this, we also just learned, not an NBA person, but Willie Mays, who's probably one of the more iconic baseball players, you know, we have ever seen. Probably the first 5-tool player. He just passed away today at the age of 93. So we'll probably talk a little bit about that as well. In the second segment, we're going to talk about what we've been talking about up until the NBA Finals. The NBA Finals just finished, and the Boston Celtics are just going to be raising their 18th banner. When we aired this show, the Boston Celtics last week, the Boston Celtics were up 3-0, and then all of a sudden, they lost a game and then went to the game 5, and then they won it. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. We're not going to spend too much time because it's only one game, and we know the result. And then the last segment is going to be, we're going to talk about the draft previews. We have been covering, the last 2 weeks, we have covered a total of 16 teams total, combined, right? And then this week we're going to go ahead and cover the next 8, and then next week we're going to cover the next 6. So I'm going to go ahead and cover the Nuggets, Grizzlies, the Suns, Thunder, Heat, and Magic, and then Twan's going to cover the Nuggets, Grizzlies, Sixers, and Knicks. So, without further delay, let's go ahead and get started. As I mentioned, the first segment is going to be talking about the legend Jerry West. Now, Tuan and I are young, right? Younger in our period when Jerry West was at his peak, right? Because he retired in 1974. And, Tuan and I were only 5 or 4 years old at that time. So we really didn't get a sense of Jerry West as the player. But what we have learned, in our lifetime is that we saw Jerry West as the GM. And Jerry West as the GM was, top notch, right? And that's probably, most of our memory about Jerry West. But, in some of the, research and, we wanted to talk a little bit about Jerry West and his playing career. You know, when we had covered the top 5 all-time starting 5 a few podcasts ago, Jerry West was not in there. But a lot of people who I know that listen to it and are older than me, they are saying that Jerry West definitely should have been considered in the top 5 of all-time starting, right? But who do you replace, right? But this is how good this guy was as a player. He was an all-star every year of his career, and he was a 10-time All-NBA first team and 4-time All-Defensive team 4 of his final 5 seasons. He's actually 4-time All-Defensive team in 4 of the last 5 seasons. So this guy was just a beast of a basketball player, just way ahead of his time. And for all of you who know, he is the logo of the NBA. You know, that guy that you see dribbling the ball, that's Jerry West, right? So Tuan, I wanted to kind of, share some of the memories we have of him. I can go through some of his early life and then leading up to how he became the GM. But I definitely wanted to get your perspective on what you know about Jerry West and what you've learned about him as you, go back and remember about his career as both a player as a GM.
Well, the thing to me that stands out as a basketball player that's the most impressive to me is Jerry West is the only player to win Finals MVP on a losing team.
Which is unheard of, insane to me, right?
That alone tells you how good the guy was. Yep. You know, for the losing team to get the MVP award is just phenomenal, right? Yep. And as you mentioned, we were young when we were growing up. We don't remember Jerry West, the player. You know, it's hard to imagine a team with Jerry West and Wilt Chamberlain not winning more than one championship.
Right.
You know, but what I do remember, and, you know, there's been a couple of players or, you know, people that I feared, and Jerry West was one of them. I feared him as a GM. I felt like, you know, as growing up as a Warrior fan, like, we're outmatched. Like, we can't do what this guy does, you know? Yep. And I used to kind of blame it on, well, you know, he's in L.A. and everybody wants to live in L.A. and the kind of my naive way to think. But the reality is, you know, when he was a Laker, the Lakers weren't the Lakers. The Lakers became the Lakers when he started Showtime, when he started, you know, bringing that up. That's when the Lakers really became the Lakers. And he had everything to do with that. I remember, you know, how he pulled Shaq away from the Orlando Magic, you know.
Yes.
It was him specifically that, you know, kind of got him. Come on, big fella. What do you need? We're going to get you over here. You know, it was him that kind of got Kobe to say, hey, you may draft me, but I only want to play with the Lakers. You know, that was Jerry West, you know, kind of whispering in his ear. When before the dynasty or whatever you want to call it of the Warriors, you know, the Warriors were thinking long and hard about trading Klay Thompson for Kevin Love. And Jerry West was the guy that goes, if you do that, I'll quit. Like, don't do that. And, you know, and so those are the things to me that stand out about the guy. The guy had such, basketball knowledge. You know, I remember him trading Marc Gasol for his brother Paul Gasol, you know, which was freaking, ended up being a brilliant move, you know.
Made him a Hall of Famer.
You know, just the other day I was watching a documentary on Vlade Divac, you know, and he drafted Vlade. You know, which, you know, he had a up and down career, but he was a solid player. He was, you know, at that point when many people weren't drafting European players, and he was kind of one of the early ones, him and Drazen Petrovic, and, you know, kind of getting that mood going. You know, he had a hand in that. I mean, he's such an icon at so many levels. He's like, you know, he's like the godfather of the NBA. You know, he's just the guy that at many levels has inspired, has created, he's succeeded at multiple levels.
Absolutely, man. And well said and well covered, you know, as far as, you know, him as a GM. And that's a lot of my memories are him as a GM. A lot of things that I remember, you've already covered him as a GM. But it, like, looking back at his playing career, you know, just looking back, you know, he was born and raised in West Virginia, and he ultimately went to go play for West Virginia. And then he got drafted by the Lakers in 1960, okay, as the second overall pick. And the number one pick that year was the Big O, right? So the Big O's number one pick, and then also Jerry West is the number two pick. So you can see those top two picks right there in that draft, that's pretty significant, right? Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, but, you know, he definitely was, you know, basketball was the big outlet for him, you know, in his youth, because, you know, he didn't make his high school football team, track and field teams. So this was kind of his outlet. And, you know, he also lost a brother, really, you know, at a young age in the Korean War. His name was David. And interestingly enough, you know, David passed away when Jerry was 12 years old. But interestingly enough, Jerry West has a son named David West. And I know David West. He's in my industry, actually. And, you know, and just not many people know about Jerry West and his family life. He's kind of a private guy. And you know, a lot of people don't know much about, unless they, you know, they played with him, they know his family and so forth. But David West is a guy that is in my industry. I knew him. I met him back in 1995, 96. And I used to play basketball with him and against him and pick up basketball games. And this guy had game, man. I'm like, who is this dude? I didn't even know who that was, David West kid or Jerry West kid. I did not know. I just knew his name was David. And so I'm like telling my buddies, I'm like, dude, who is this guy, man? This guy's a baller, man. He's like, that's Jerry West's son, David. I'm like, holy crap. No way. No wonder. Right. So, you know, but yeah, so he named, you know, his first son after his brother, David. So, but you know, we don't really have a good sense of how he was, you and I, as a player, his personality, right? We didn't really get a sense of that because we were too young to really see how he was. But from what I've heard, he's one of these type of guys that was a perfectionist. He definitely was one of these types that felt he was never good enough and always motivated him to play harder and harder. And what's interesting enough is that the first time I really got a sense of maybe who Jerry West was as a player, not even as a player, but as a coach, a GM and player, but how he was depicted in the show that HBO had, it was called Winning Time, Rise of the Lakers Dynasty, right?
Yep.
And
yep.
I got to tell you, man, that was
good a show, by the way. Good show.
It was awesome, man. I mean, it was hilarious. And you know what's interesting is the main reasons why I watched that show is because how Jerry West was being depicted. He was freaking hilarious. But you know, a lot of the people, the true people who knew Jerry West, they hated the way he was depicted in that show.
Yep.
They felt that wasn't
Jerry. Jerry was upset as well.
Yeah, he was. He did not like the way he was depicted. And you know, to me, it was funny as hell, man. I mean, the character that he was being portrayed. Let's just say it's fictional character Jerry West. The way they depicted him was awesome, man, because he was hilarious. But I think they tried to capture kind of like his perfectionism a little bit. You know, he was definitely one of these types that didn't want to lose. He hated losing. It's very well known that he hated losing as a player, right? So. But I thought that was really interesting. And then, you know, come to find out that, you know, this guy went to 9 finals, right? And he only won one.
Yeah.
He only won one, right?
With LJ. Now you know why he hates losing.
Yeah, you know why he hates losing. But the thing is that, you know, like when we were growing up, you know, with, you know, Jordan and Magic, you know, all these, you know, anybody who was going up against Jordan, they would lose, right? And the same thing happened here with, you know, Elgin Baylor and Jerry West. You know, they actually faced, you know, the Celtics. So Bill Russell and the Celtics, you know, a lot of times. And interestingly enough, six of those losses came to the Celtics. So the other thing about them is that the Lakers, this team, do you remember when the Warriors were like on a serious winning streak during their, I think it was like 2015 or 2016 season?
Yeah, they were like 24 games that were getting
close. They were trying to get close to this, you know, the all-time record of the most wins, most consecutive wins. And the most consecutive wins happened, you know, with the team that Jerry West was on. They won 33 games in a row. And,
well, funny little connection there. The coach that was spearheading most of those wins was Bill Walton's son, Luke Walton, which because Steve Kerr was out, I don't remember.
Oh, right. You're right.
Steve Kerr was out for some reason and Luke Walton. And then all this media started kicking up like Luke Walton's a great coach. Anyone can coach the Warriors and all this stuff, you know, like back and forth. So just interesting little connection, obviously.
Yeah, no, it's interesting.
So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, like I said, we know this guy was a hell of a player. We know this guy was a hell of a GM. And from what we have heard from people who knew him, he was a hell of a person. So I know he's only, you know, have one championship, but this guy is highly regarded as one of the best players of all time. And, you know, We're going to sorely miss him as, you know, this icon of a person. You know, but he is the logo of the NBA. I don't think they're ever going to change the logo. I mean, they had always talked about maybe changing it to Jordan. But, you know, this guy was, you know, the face of the NBA for quite some time. Even though he only won championships, one championship, you know, the guy was just a stellar player and a stellar GM. So, you know.
Well, to be clear, one as a player, I believe he has 6 as a GM.
As a GM, right. But, you know, my condolences to the West family. You know, he died at a young age. You know, he's 86 years old. I mean, these days it's not that old. But, you know, that's an advanced year, but you're still, people should be living up to their 90s easily.
Yeah.
But, you know, he still lived a fruitful life. So we just wanted to go ahead and commend him and show him some respect and remember Jerry West, the player, the GM, the legend, the Hall of Famer, the father, the husband, the brother. That's Jerry West.
Yeah, no, agreed. Mild-mannered. I always liked his demeanor, at least when he was speaking to the public, you know, which to your point seemed very different than the way they depicted him on Winning Time. But
exactly.
You know, I can, you know, there's been a couple of guys that have been depicted. If you remember Billy Beane for the A's, you know, he couldn't watch the game. You know, there's kind of the same type of character. Like, I can't stand to look at this. I got to go. I'm so nervous. You know, I can see Jerry West kind of having some of those feelings. But yes, you know, a huge presence in the league, a huge presence in the way the NBA went, the growth of the NBA. And yeah, condolences to family, and he will be missed.
Yep, absolutely. And we, like I said, you know, we've lost two legends in the last, 16 days or almost 3 weeks in Bill Walton and now Jerry West. But then we also heard of the passing of Willie Mays. So I know, Tuan, you wanted to kind of spend some time on remembering Willie Mays before.
Yeah. I mean, this Willie Mays has a unique impact on my life. He's probably the most impactful player I've ever had that I'd never seen play. Growing up, both Eddie and I grew up native San Franciscans, and in the 70s, before Joe Montana, before Jerry Rice, even before Rick Barry, there was Willie Mays. And Willie Mays was the Bay Area. I mean, everyone loved Willie Mays. I grew up always kind of not watching him. I was a big Willie McCovey guy. But, for those that don't know, in the 70s, San Francisco was a Giants town. Everything was about the Giants because they really had the most success up until that point. Granted, most of their success was as the New York Giants, but Willie Mays was just a grand presence, And we talked about on this show many times about, players not getting their due because the media, they didn't treat the media right or they didn't. Willie Mays, from the time that I can remember him to his death, always seemed to be a gracious man, always seemed to be willing to talk to people. He never once gave me the vibe like he thought he was better than you or bigger than you.
Very humble man.
Yes. I remember when Bonds joined the Giants, he said, "Hey, if you want my 24, you can have it." Bonds was like, "There's no way in heck, I'm going to take your number, Willie." He ended up taking his father's number, which was obviously 25.
Yep.
That's the kind of guy Willie was,
Willie Mays was his godfather.
Was his godfather. Correct.
He was Barry Bonds' godfather.
Yep. Exactly. But you would think that someone of, Bonds was a player already at that stage, but he wasn't Willie Mays' stage.
Right.
For him to just go, "Hey, you can have the number if you want it." And, Barry made the right choice. Don't take the number.
Yeah, I agree.
Leave Willie alone, kind of deal. But, I just, as being a native San Franciscan growing up in that era, I just wanted to just give him a couple of minutes because he is, many times he was referred to as the greatest living baseball player alive, he served in the Army. He lost a couple of years off of his baseball numbers. He was never a guy that tried to get home runs or tried to get steals or try to, he used to say, "Well, if I knew that, this was going to be important or that was going to be important, I might have done more of it." I was just kind of out there playing a game, So the numbers he got because that's how he played. That's what was important at the time. He wasn't stat chasing.
And I think if I remember correctly, he hit 660 career home runs, if I remember correctly. And just imagine if he had not played at Candlestick Park.
How many home runs he
would have, right?
He might have another 100.
He might have another 100. If he didn't miss those 2 years either, he would probably get to 800. He might be the all-time leading, home run hitter we've ever had.
Correct.
But he was like the original kind of five-tool guy, right? He can field, he can hit, he can, steal bases. He was just, one of these guys that was just like a gem of a player that you just rarely see as a generational talent, right? A transcendent player in baseball. And, people still to this day consider him the best of all time. Even though we've had a bunch of great players that have come since then, but no one to that same level, as maybe Ted Williams might be another one that might be comparable to Willie Mays. But even then, Willie Mays is probably even has more accolades than Ted Williams. Then you have, the new school, Barry Bonds, his godson would probably be a guy that could maybe rival, but only from a hitting standpoint, nothing else really, right? He couldn't steal as many bases as him, nor could he field as good as Willie Mays. So Willie Mays was a hell of a player, man, to say, "Hey kid, man." Rest in peace, Willie. My condolences to the extended Mays family on behalf of the Buzzer Beaters family. We remember you and we thank you for your contribution, especially for your relative's contribution to the Major League Baseball.
93 years young and you still feel like that wasn't enough,
I agree.
But and ironically, I believe tomorrow or the day after they're going to have a game in Alabama honoring the Negro Leagues. And Willie Mays was supposed to go, but he said he declined because he couldn't get around as much. But yeah, you know, that game is probably going to now have a whole different vibe in regards to, I mean, it was already going to honor Willie Mays. It was already going to, you know, talk about him. It's probably going to go tenfold. And, you know, in my opinion, no one deserves it more than Willie. You know, and I'm sure they'll do him right on that game. I plan to watch. And,
And I think even Major League Baseball is going to do something too. I mean, this guy's an icon. He's an icon, right? I mean, he's one of the more iconic figures of baseball, that, you know, baseball's ever seen. So.
Yeah, if Major League Baseball had a logo, he'd most likely be it.
Like, yeah, like, well, I agree.
The NBA, you know,
I agree.
We're not losing just famous people. We're losing like legends. I mean, Jerry West and Willie Mays are
icons.
Yeah,
icons of the sport.
Exactly. Yep. They're the players that the current players look up to. You know, like they're like, oh, that's my hero kind of type players. You know, so
exactly. Yeah.
So just, well, hey, man, just 5 minutes real quick, talk about Willie Mays. I just wanted to.
Yeah, no worries, man. And, you know, it's always kind of a awkward segue from, you know, remembering people, you know, who have passed to go to something that is not as meaningful, you know, as the life of the person, but going into something, you know, that we're covering sports. But, you know, these guys, you know, that's what they did and loved. And, you know, we're covering, you know, the sports, and our you know, podcast is specific to basketball. But we wanted to go ahead and just, you know, pay homage to an icon of baseball as well as an icon of basketball in Jerry West, and then the icon of baseball being Willie Mays. So anyway, so all right, man. So let's go to the awkward segue.
The awkward cutover
to the
NBA champion Boston NBA Celtics
finals, man. So
yes,
you know, last week when we were having this podcast, the Celtics were up 3-0. And then, you know, game four happened. We're thinking this could be a sweep. And lo and behold, just like the Celtics typically like to do, they go ahead and lay an egg, right? And it's pretty obvious. I mean, let's give kudos to the Dallas Mavericks. The Dallas Mavericks showed up to play, man. They played hard. They did not want to get swept. And that was very evident, you know, kind of like the way the Minnesota Timberwolves in the previous series kind of went, you know, they didn't want to get swept either. But, you know, you know, the same thing happened with the Dallas Mavericks here. So, and then, you know, then it turned around to, you know, game five. And then, you know, lo and behold, it was in Boston. And then the Boston Celtics, you know, beat them and now are raising their 18th banner, beating now the rival Lakers, you know, as being the number one team with the most championships in the NBA. So, you know, as far as what I saw, man, I saw, you know, Jason Tatum finally kind of showed up offensively, honestly, in that last game, man. You know, even though Jaylen Brown was the MVP and he deserved it, Jaylen Brown was the best player. And maybe, you know,
is that who you would have voted for?
Yeah, I think he was the right guy. I mean, he was definitely the most impactful player to me on both sides of the ball. You can argue Jrue Holiday was there too.
That's why, but
Jaylen Brown was setting the tone, man. I mean, he was playing hard on both sides and, you know, driving to the bucket, making dunks, just trying to get the momentum on the Celtics side. And, you know, so, but yeah, I would say Jaylen Brown definitely deserved to be the MVP. Probably the second person after that would be Jrue Holiday, to be deserving of that. And then, you know, probably just because it's, you know, Jason Tatum, because he does a lot for the team. But, you know, if you were to look at like the star players on that team, you know, Jason Tatum, he needs that other level of the killer instinct. And Jaylen Brown brought it in this finals. He had that killer instinct. And if Jason Tatum had that, he would be an unbelievable, he'd be on a whole another level. Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe he's still a young kid. He can probably get there, but I don't know if he can teach that. Either you have it or you don't, man.
Well, you know, sometimes it's like when you have a lid on the basket, you know, and you finally make a basket and everything starts going in. You know, maybe his mentality was get a championship and then everything starts coming out, you know, because, you know, I agree with you. I mean, he's definitely extremely talented. And if he had that extra little fire, that extra little, you know, get out of my way type of, you know, mentality, then he could definitely take it up a level. And maybe winning the championship opens that up for him, you know.
And you know what? He had that drive in this game. He had it.
He did. In that game, he did.
He really wanted it, right? So, but if he could just bring it like that all the time, he would be a hell of a player. He already is from a talent standpoint. He's ridiculous. He's like unbelievable talent wise. He can shoot. He can dribble. He dribbles like a guard. He can post up. He can shoot at all different types of angles. And he's a great defensive player, man. You know, he just sometimes lacks that. That Kobe Bryant, like, oh, I'm going to kill you, right?
He doesn't have I mean, there's very few people that have it like Kobe had it. But yeah, I get what you're saying. A little more Kobe, a little less Wiggins, you know?
Yeah. So let me ask you this. So, you know, the Mavericks played well. Luka was unbelievable this series. Kyrie had his moments, but he didn't have as great of a series as he had in the last series against the Timberwolves. But he definitely showed up here and there, and he still shows that he's a matchup problem for a lot of teams. But the Celtics, for whatever reason, they got in his head a little bit. I think he was pressing a little bit sometimes because he was just trying to score too much, I think. Didn't let the game come to him a little bit as much as he did in the last series. But he, you know, make no mistake, Kyrie Irving is a player. He still is a really good player. And, you know, I would say that, you know, I think he's going to be a future Hall of Famer, in my opinion, just because of, you know, he has that championship, right? But he's a hell of a player, man. He's probably the most skilled dribbler we've ever seen. He's definitely a highly skilled player, probably one of the more higher skilled players in the NBA right now, even at, you know, at his age. But, you know, he's, you know, the Mavericks, you know, to me, are an up-and-coming team, but they're missing one piece. And I think they're missing one additional scoring piece. You know, they have these really good defensive wing guys, right? You know, they have Derek Jones. You know, Maxi Kleber actually did really good from a defensive standpoint. You have P.J. Washington, who's a very good defensive guy. Derek Lively is a guy who's emerging. He's going to be a beast. Yeah, I mean, I did not see that kid coming like that, man. Yeah. He showed up, man. This guy is going to be a problem, you know, in the West for years to come. So, but I think that they need somebody else to help offload Luka on the scoring side. The Celtics, they have that. They have three guys that can score, you know, in Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and then take your pick, Derek White or Drew Holiday, right? Either one of those two can do it, right? They have four guys that can score, whereas the Mavericks, they really only have two that really can score 20 points a game, right?
Well, the difference, right? And obviously these games are about matchups, but the difference is the Celtics have four players that can play offense and they have four players that can play defense, right? So like that's the thing, you know, like Luka's defense, you know, you can tell that he uses a lot of energy on offense and defense. He tries to, for lack of a better word, gimmick his way through it.
Right.
You know, and when you have an aggressive team like Jaylen Brown was being, like Tatum was being, you know, last night, or like how Drew Holiday is all the time and like how White is all the time, you know, you're not like gimmicky defense isn't going to work. And so this was just a very difficult matchup for Dallas. And I agree with you. They need another scorer.
Yeah.
But they need a scorer that can defend, right? Because if they just get an offensive player, they're going to come up short, I think, again, when they need a team that is more defensive. You know, I'd be curious, like, next year, you know, like, one thing that I found fascinating, like, this particular game, this last game, game five, you know, I was watching the defense, and it was reminding me of when I was watching the Timberwolves, you know, kind of punish the Denver Nuggets on with their defense. You know, they're, like, everywhere.
Right.
And that's what I was seeing. It's, like, that's everywhere. And that takes a lot of energy and a lot of effort.
Absolutely.
But when you meet up with teams like that, I think, you know, give them another year, you know, depending on what Memphis is going to do, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. You know, I think that that's going to pose a challenge for them. I think that defensive heavy teams are going to pose a challenge for, quote unquote, the best offensive backcourt in the history of the NBA, right? Stan Van Gundy here, but yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, I can see where he's coming from. I mean, because they both are not just outside shooters. They both can drive to the basket. Whereas the Warriors, they're mostly known for their outside shooting. Although Steph Curry's a really good driver. He's underrated in that aspect.
Correct.
But, you know, they have four championships, right? And Dallas and you know, the Dallas Mavericks duo doesn't have, you know, any together yet, right? I think it's probably coming. But, you know, as you were talking about a defensive-minded guy who can also score, there had been talks months ago that the Mavericks were actually interested in Andrew Wiggins, interestingly enough. But, you know, Andrew Wiggins needs, I think, a change of scenery. You know, he'd be somebody that's a good candidate. He defended Luka awesome, you know, in the playoffs a couple years ago. Maybe that's why Dallas wants to take him off of potentially the Warriors' hands, because he wouldn't be a problem for Luka defensively anymore. He'd be on the same team. But anyway, somebody like that.
A player that is, I believe, a free agent that we – and I have Dallas next week. We'll be covering them next week. Is some player by the name of Paul George, which may be
– he would be awesome for them.
Pretty good fit for Dallas there.
He would be awesome. Just another scoring threat who plays defense. And just like you mentioned, those are two guys that can score. Paul George is a better scorer than Andrew Wiggins, and they're both very good defensive players.
Yep.
I would probably say maybe Paul George is better and more accomplished defensive player than Andrew Wiggins, but Andrew Wiggins, if he puts his mind to it, could probably be even better than Paul George, but just put his mind to it. So anyway, for whatever reason. But anyway, so moving forward, do you see anybody in the East contending with the Celtics in the next season? Do you see anybody that could push them, or do you see them to be the team to beat again next year?
No, I think they're definitely the team to beat again next year. I think there's a couple of teams that, you know, like the Orlando Magic. They're a young team. You know, if they can pick up some shooting, they might. Again, they're so young. You know, it's just hard to judge the youth, but. Yep. Like in terms of, you know, the Knicks were another one. You know, the Knicks had Julius Randle that was hurt. Now they have a couple of centers. We'll talk about them in a minute. You know, they gotta make a couple of moves. So I think the Knicks are definitely a team that could potentially threaten the Celtics. The Indiana Pacers are another squad. You know, I think they need a little bit more defense. You know, one of the things that goes underrated with the Warriors' success is how much Draymond Green was dominant on defense. I mean, he was like the anchor of that defense, and he made everything work. And I think that the Pacers need something like that. They need somebody.
A defensive guy.
Yeah. A defensive presence, and that's going to take them to the next level. Because they got no problem scoring. The problem they have is stopping the other team from scoring. And the Celtics are going to slow them down and score on them, right? So, but I think that those are a couple of squads, depending on what they do during this offseason, that could potentially be in there. But I, for right now, you know, as far as I know, the Celtics aren't losing anybody. Their starters are all locked up in terms of for the next year. So I would say that the threat for the Celtics is going to have to come from the West. I don't think that this particular season coming up, the Celtics are going to get a threat from the East, barring injuries, of course.
Yeah, but you brought up the team that I think that could be the team that could press them. And that's Pacers pressed them every game. Unfortunately, they just couldn't close it out, right? They got swept, but every game was freaking close, man. So I think they might be just one player away themselves. Like I said, in the, you know, when we were covering in the pre-draft previews and with the Indiana Pacers, you know, Kevin Durant would be freaking an awesome fit for that team. And if Kevin Durant is on the Indiana Pacers, watch out, man. They're going to press the Celtics in the East. So,
the catch with that is always who you give up to get Durant, right?
Because I hear you.
Durant's not coming to the team as currently constituted, right?
You have to give up somebody. I hear you.
They got to give up Siakam and, you know, Turner, for example.
Miles Turner, right.
Yeah, like if you have to give up those two for Devin Durant, you're kind of, well,
yeah.
you're
handicapping yourself a little bit. Right?
Yeah, that's before, always the trick there.
Before we move on to the draft previews for the teams that we're going to cover, one parting comment I'm going to make as well is that I was really happy for Al Horford, man. Al Horford, you know, after 17
Latino.
Years, everyone is, Dominicano, right? Yeah, his dad, you can see his dad in the stands was really happy for him. And, you know, it's kudos, man, to him that you know, he waited 17 years to finally get, you know, the title. You can tell it meant a lot to him, man. Yeah. You know, that's so cool.
It was
to see that.
It was
and he was really, and dude, and he's a freaking good player still. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing how good that guy is still at 37. He's still freaking good.
And you know, the reason he's good and the reason I like him is because he always has played within himself. You know, he always perfects the things that he's good at. And there's other players that have gone longer periods of time. I don't want to drop any names. So I don't be like a hater or anything. But, you know, which I'm like, I don't ever want him to win a championship just because they're jerks. You know, I don't want this guy to win or I don't want that guy to win.
You want the good guys to win.
Horford is the exact opposite. opposite of that. I'm not particularly a huge Celtics fan. You know, they, and the reason being because they've won so much, them and the Lakers have won so much. It's like, let somebody else catch up. Let somebody else threaten, you know, the amount of banners that you have. But Horford is one guy, like, you know, you're like, you know, he's a good guy and you want to see him, you want to see good guys win. And I agree with you. That it was touching and I'm glad that he was able to get, you know, his roses or his flowers, as they say.
Yep, absolutely, man. So, all right, man. So let's go on to the next segment about the pre-draft previews. As you know, we are going to have a live draft show on the 26th of June, Wednesday, for the first round, and then on the 27th, Thursday of June, for the second round. We're covering all 30 teams prior to the draft. We're going to finish covering all of this by next Tuesday for the next Wednesday show. We're going to cover the last six teams, but for this week, we're going to start on the East. And Twan, I think you have either the Knicks or the Sixers. We can start with
the Knicks. I'll start with the Knicks.
You want to start with the Knicks first? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So, having done this a couple of weeks, I'm going to try to match your flow in regards to how we're doing this. So I'm going to start with the roster needs, trade targets, who's in the draft, top draft picks, top busts. So in terms of roster needs, you know, the Knicks obviously advanced pretty far into the playoffs. I mean, you know, when we start getting into, and I think some of these teams we're going to start getting into, they realistically have very little wiggle room to get anybody, right? They're on the first apron, some are on the second apron. I mean, they're limited. So I tried to keep all of that in mind. So for me, the things that the roster needs for the Knicks, first and foremost, you got to get and stay healthy, right? They had a lot of injuries in the playoffs, and we've talked about this. Tom Thibodeau is a very demanding coach on defense, which, you know, we love as fans. We love that. We love a coach with a lot of energy, but that seems to always result in a lot of wear and tear on his players.
Yeah, he demands a lot.
Demands a lot, and he typically keeps a small rotation, right? He doesn't really go to the 9th, 10th, 11th players. He's usually somewhere in the 7 to 8 range. And so he demands a lot from them. So I think for the Knicks to be successful, they really got to stay healthy, right? They got a lot of good pieces, so that's key element. And the other one is they're going to need some support scoring. Now, they have some of that, you know, Julius Randle can score, you know, Mitchell Robinson can score, but they were hurt, you know, obviously Brunson can score. They got DiVincenzo.
Josh Hart.
So they have scorers, but, you know, having a little bit of a deeper bench a la Celtics, you know, can't hurt. And then I think for this coming year, they're really going to have to identify who's going to play the five, who's going to be their center. Now, anyone who's watched the playoffs, they're going to go, it was Hartenstein, hands down. But, you know, Mitchell Robinson has been there for a while. You know, so I think they're going to have to move one of those two guys, you know, and in preference to pick up somebody that maybe another wing defender, maybe another support scorer, maybe to drop the overall salary in order to get a little bit more bench depth, somewhere along those lines. Looked like you were going to say something.
No, I was going to say, what about just keeping those intact? I mean, you have one backing up the other.
You can, but, you know, you're going to have Julius Randle who can play the low post. You're going to have Hartenstein who's obviously, he's a restricted free agent. I mean, you can have some of these things. OG Anunoby is another guy I believe is a free agent. They're going to have to try to sign him and keep him. So they've got some things they're going to have to decide. And depending on where they are with their salary cap and what they want to spend, they may have to trade one of those guys out in order to make all of that work for their numbers and still get some bench depth. This is the way I'm looking at it. Obviously, if you can keep everybody, but I'm being, like I said, I'm being a little realistic with the salary and seeing what they're going to do on that front. You know, the Knicks, you know, historically, historically, I don't think they're like the super big spending team. That might change now that they're a little more successful, but you know, it's more of a culture and how they want to handle it. So those are the roster needs. Some trade targets, so a couple of people we've already discussed, Donovan Mitchell was one of them. I think that, you know, that's potentially somebody that you could package, somebody like Mitchell Robinson, someone else for. Now, the Cavs got a lot of big guys themselves, so maybe that's not an exact good fit, but you know, if you want to like maybe trade OG Anunoby, you know, a sign and trade for Donovan Mitchell, or, you know, you want to get another kind of backcourt scorer, you know, like a starter type. He's somebody that might be able to impact. And then a couple of people that we brought up, or at least Mikal Bridges, I know we brought up multiple times. So I think he's a support scorer that can definitely help. And then the other one is Bruce Brown. You know, Bruce Brown, I think, is a nice wing, depending on, again, what happens with Anunoby. I think those are players that they could look at target. You know, they're, with the exception of Donovan Mitchell, these guys aren't super high-end players, but, you know, players that maybe you can make work depending on what you do with your current roster.
Yeah, those three guys are very popular choices for a lot of teams. It's going to be interesting to see who is going to, you know, take those guys away from their existing teams.
Correct. And one that is kind of wish list, you know, and I'm going to be curious. I think you have Phoenix, but I'm really curious as to what Phoenix is going to do because they're really hamstrung. You know, they've got a lot of money in their three stars. And so one guy that, you know, you might be able to, depending on what is Devin Booker, right? Somebody that maybe, depending on what Phoenix wants to do, it's a possibility. But again, that's more dependent on what Phoenix's approach is going to be, because if Phoenix keeps the current team they have, they really, it's going to be hard for them to pick up anybody.
No, I agree. I agree.
They don't have the space. So that's just, you know, kind of pie in the sky, wishful thinking.
So Devin Booker was the guy that you think it might be a good fit for the Knicks.
I think he'd be a good fit. Whether he's available and what they'd have to give up is the conversation that we'd have to get into.
Okay.
But yeah, and again, that's dependent on what Phoenix is going to do. I think, you know, in my opinion, I think if I'm going to play GM here for a minute. If I'm trying to get players from Phoenix, if I'm an established team that is just one player away from winning an NBA championship, I'm targeting Kevin Durant, right? That's who I'm getting. But if I'm a team who's kind of in the middle but on the rise, then maybe I'm looking at Devin Booker. The one player that I'm not looking at is Beal. Like, I'm not touching Beal. I don't want Beal. You know, as a GM, playing an amateur GM here.
Right. GM from another team, though, right?
GM from another team, correct. Yeah. To me, those are the two guys that, you know, if they're going to have a fire sale, those are my first two players that I'm going to pick depending on where I am. You know, if Minnesota were to get Durant or Indiana were going to get Durant, they got far into the playoffs. He's enough to get him to
take him over the top.
Exactly. Take him over the top. But if, you know, you know, like the Knicks got taken out a round earlier, you know, they may look at somebody like Devin Booker, who's good for now and good for a couple of years from now, you know, so they can create something with that. So just depending on where you are kind of in your stages of your team, that might be something that you want to look at. But again, you know, those are the two guys that would be on my wish list of guys that I could pluck from Phoenix.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to the draft. So, the Knicks actually have two back-to-back picks. They have the 24th pick and the 25th pick. Now, I did something a little bit here. There's going to be some repetition. We've had some repetition in the past on different players. But I tried to kind of stay a little bit away from that so that at least when, you know, we're drafting, we kind of keep that in order. So one guy that I thought for the Knicks was John Furphy from Kansas. Forward. Yep. Yeah, he's freshman, Australian guy. You know, he's been compared to, like, Cam Johnson. He lacks a little bit of size and physicality, but he's kind of one of those wing guys, a bench guy that maybe could be a little bit of a scorer for them. Another guy was Ryan Dunn from Virginia, power forward, right? Maybe he's like a backup power forward. He's a tall for power forward. He's 6'6". He's a power forward, 6'6", a little undersized for a power forward, but kind of a hefty guy. He's a big wing defender, so he can do that as well. So those are two guys that I picked for the – now, these kind of – you know, kind of can swap in and out. And then depending on what they do, you know, we talked about the center thing with Mitchell Robinson. You know, somebody they could look at that could be maybe cheaper and keep him is someone like Zach Edey. So Zach Edey might be available at the 25th pick, you know, if they decide.
I think he will be.
I think he will be too. So if they can trade Robinson for something of value, then they can replace Robinson's minutes with maybe somebody like Zach Edey, right? You know, maybe a little, you know, Robinson's been hurt the last couple of years. He's got some questions around, you know,
health.
So Edey might be a cheaper and longer term solution. So that was one person. And then the other one was Jalen Tyson, small forward, power forward, 6'6", out of California. You know, he's been compared to Caleb Martin. He's got some very good skills, very good traits. Good ball handling, good playmaking, you know, those types of things. So that's somebody else that I think could be, you know, available to them and somebody that they could possibly pick up.
I don't, you know, but the Zach Edey pick. Yeah. So offensively, yes. Defensively, we know Thibodeau's a defensive minded guy.
Correct.
That guy is going to have to seriously lose some weight and get more agile to be a Tom Thibodeau rotation.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Right? But, you know, in spurts, maybe that guy would work, right? You know, for 10-minute spurts when they need, you know, a low post presence to be able to, you know, take advantage of the other team's, you know, weak defensive guy. You know, that's when the Zach Edey makes sense. But you never know. We'll see what happens, man. But I'm just pointing out something that could
be. Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on, they have a second round pick. So those were for the 24th and 25th pick.
Yep.
They do also have a second round pick, a 38th pick. I only really kind of identified one guy for this, which was Terrence Shannon out of Illinois. He's a shooting guard, small forward combo, kind of more of a seasoned guy, 23 years old. You know, he's been sort of compared to Kelly Oubre. So he's kind of more defensive minded. The only kind of thing on him was that, you know, he was accused of aggravated sexual assault. He was found not guilty. So, you know, maybe a reason why he's going to slip down a little bit. He has athleticism. He has shot making. You know, there's a lot of NBA interest, but, you know, there's that kind of that looming, you know, he was found not guilty, but obviously teams do their due diligence, and that may be somebody that you could take advantage of at a later round that has maybe a first round type of skill.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Moving down to the, what are we, the top two draft picks in history. All right. So this is fun. So, some notables, Patrick Ewing was a notable. You know, he was in our most overrated segment. At least we put him in. I don't remember if it was you or me, but he was in our segment.
He was in mine. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. You had him too. Yeah. So exactly. We didn't talk. Yeah.
And then there was Bill Bradley, you know, the politician. I don't think he's a politician anymore, but is he still with us? Is Bill Bradley still with us? I don't remember.
No, I don't even know. I forgot Bill Bradley. It's not Sean Bradley. We're talking about
Bill Bradley. This is Bill Bradley. Yeah. This is like 60s, you know.
Okay.
He became a
senator. Oh, yeah, I remember that guy.
He became a senator, I believe.
That's right.
So he's up there as one of their. And then the other one was, you know, Mark Jackson. Man down. You know, as everyone knows.
Shimmy.
Yeah, the shimmy, exactly. So they were all loaded as notables. But of course, you know, one of the things that I put as high on the list is championships. You know, I rate that very high when you have successful drafts. Because, I mean, what are you drafting for if you're not drafting to win championships? Right. And the two guys that I have here, you know, I think all Knicks fans are going to know who they are. The first one is, you know, Clyde Walt-Frazier. So, you know, won championships in 70 and 73, seven-time All-Star. You know, he was the NBA All-Star MVP, you know, four-time All-NBA first team, so on and so forth. You know, he is one of the greater Knicks in Knicks history. And then the other one, of course, is the famous Willis Reed, right? What Porzingis tried to do at the last Celtics come out and be there. You know, he's also won two championships, both in 70 and 73. You know, to me, like when you draft, like I said, you're trying to win championships. And I think those are two of the Knick icons until, you know, someday they win a championship again. And then maybe this list will be revisited. But those guys are legends in New York. And I'm sure that any New York fan would probably agree with me. You know, maybe some will hate and throw Patrick Ewing in there if you're a little bit younger. But, you know, Patrick was never able to deliver it. And those guys were. So, which is why I have them as opposed to Patrick on there.
All right.
And then we go to the top two busts in the New York Knicks history. So these were one was sad and one was actually quite shocking. The first one is Mike Sweetney out of Georgetown, 2003 draft, 9th pick. He was an undersized kind of a big power forward. However, into his rookie season, his father died. And he slipped into depression and was impacted and, you know, he was never really quite the same and he struggled, didn't play. It's kind of, you know, I feel almost bad to put it as a bust, but obviously what you're looking at is the draft pick and the production.
And
the production, but you know, he just wasn't the same, you know? And so he struggled with it. You know, he noted that he tried to attempt suicide. You know, now he's doing much better. He speaks in councils and you know, and works with the youth to make sure that, you know, they have a more positive outlook and things of that nature. So he's come out of it, which is great. But in terms of a draft pick, you know, being the 9th pick in the 2003 draft, you know, that was you know, it never worked out. And, yeah. you know, players in that draft that they could have had, you know, wasn't like a litany of talent, but, you know, you had David West in that draft. You had Boris Diaw, who had a very long and, you know, annoying, I can say annoying because he was just, he was an annoying player that always, you know, seemed to do well. And then Kyle Korver, you know, is three players that they could have had. But yeah, this was more kind of a sad tale, you know, around yeah. Mike Sweeney, which was, and then the other one was Frederick Weiss. He's the 1999 draft. He was the 15th pick, right? So Jeff Van Gundy was the coach of the time, and there seems to be some controversy about taking him. It seems like most, so let me, I'm going to jump around here a little bit. So one of the players that they could have had was Ron Artest, and he's a native of New York. And apparently a bulk of the organization wanted Ron Artest. They wanted Ron Artest. But for whatever reason, the powers that be decided to draft this Frederick Weiss guy. And during camp, you know, Frederick got the impression that they didn't want him there, that, you know, he wasn't. So he never signed a rookie contract. He went back to France. As a matter of fact, his agent had a stake in a French pro team, and they took him back, and he ended up playing for the French pro team. Never played a single minute for the New York. Yeah.
Wow.
So that was like, I mean, that's as bus gets. You like, you know, you never got anything out of him, you know, and some players that they could have had, as I mentioned, was in that draft, Ron Artest, Manu Ginobili, Andre Kirilenko. I mean, at that point, you could have pretty much picked up anybody, which probably would have produced more than what you got out of him because he never played a minute. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, for those younger fans out there, you know, European players coming into the NBA is just a natural thing now. But there was, back in the day, there was a lot of unknowns. You know, there was a lot of, you know, differences in playing style, you know, differences in physicality, differences in mindset and maturity. And you just didn't know. It wasn't like you could just jump on YouTube and watch this guy or do this stuff. You know, the scouts had to pick up different players. And I think he's just one of those guys that wasn't ready or mature enough or, you know, wasn't the kind of guy, like, you know, didn't have the Kobe in him. Like, you guys don't think I can play? Oh, I'll show you I can play, you know, kind of deal. No.
Right.
He just said, hey, you know what? I'm going to turn around and go home. Go play for my French team. And he went ahead and did that. So that is my coverage of
the Knicks.
On the Knicks. You want me to
keep going? Now you have the Sixers now, right? Sixers next.
Correct. Yes. The Philadelphia 76ers. All right. Nice background. I like that one. Yeah. All right. So a couple of roster needs. Really, their main roster needs is they need wing help. But
wing help.
They need wing help. But their most important, to me, their most important roster need is to retain Tyrese Maxey. You know, he's restricted, so they will.
Yeah.
They will. But, you know, you and I know, we've been around long enough that nothing's guaranteed, right?
Right.
But to me, you need to keep this kid. He is phenomenal, in my opinion. Yeah, so,
for sure.
So those are the two things that I had. And in terms of looking at wing help, you know, we already talked about it. Was Paul George potentially. There's been a lot of talk around Jimmy Butler, especially in these parts with the Golden State Warriors. You know, Miami may be looking. So I think those are two potential good fits. I think Indiana's going to sign Siakam. I think that's pretty much in the bag, but that's another wing help that could, you know, could really do well for the Philadelphia 76ers. So those are three targets that kind of I have outlined. You know, I don't know what they're going to do with Tobias Harris, and they got a couple of dudes, I think, on that
Kelly
team.
Kelly Oubre is another one they have there, but I think Kelly he's a free Oubre. Agent.
Correct, yeah. correct. So Kelly Oubre is a free agent, and, you know, he's not as much of a scorer. He's more of a defender, more of that.
But he gets streaky. He's a streaky shooter at times, you know?
He is streaky, but, I mean, if you get someone, you know, like Jimmy Butler, who is a solid defender and more consistent scorer, that's definitely an upgrade in that in that area. But again, it's what roster changes are you going to do to get these guys is always the question there. But those are some of the guys that I had targeted for them.
Okay.
They actually initially had two picks in the draft. One got rescinded. One got taken away for some violation that the Sixers did. So their second-round pick, which was the 41st pick in the draft, got taken away. So they only have one pick in this draft, which is the 16th pick of the first round. And so a couple of players that I had identified there is one is Khalil Ware, center from Indiana, 7-footer, sophomore. You know, he's been compared to Brooke Lopez. I think that, you know, Embiid has a history, obviously, of getting hurt.
Getting injured, yeah.
They also need, you know, maybe a backup center, somebody young and cheap, especially if they're going to pay some of, especially when they're going to pay Tyrese Maxey, they're going to start hitting that salary cap. Yep. So they're going to have to bring in players from the draft to kind of compensate for that. And I think that guy might be somebody that could do that. Another one, as a backup point guard potentially is Jared McCain, who's, from Duke.
From Duke.
Most of us know him. 20-year-old freshman,
he's a good shooter.
Somebody that we're looking as a backup, you know, to the starting point guard. And so those were the two people that I kind of had identified there, you know, both the big and the little, the one and the five in terms of doing that. All right. Moving down, the top two draft picks in the Sixers history. So some notables here. Joel Embiid, Maurice Cheeks,
Billy Cunningham.
Yeah, Mo Cheeks, Billy Cunningham.
Billy Cunningham, wow.
Yep, that's yep. Right. Yeah, Andre, which Billy Cunningham, you know, if you remember, he was the coach when the Sixers won the finals with Dr. J. I believe that was 84, I think that was. But there's Andre Iguodala was a draft pick of the 76ers, and Jrue Holiday. Billy Cunningham won as a player, and Mo Cheeks was good. So I'm going to break my own rule here because Mo Cheeks ended up winning a championship with the Sixers, but I didn't put him as the top draft because the two players that I had, I thought were so extremely talented and so extremely kind of changed, especially the first one, changed basketball with the first one's Allen Iverson, right? So Allen Iverson was the 1996 first pick. He never won a championship, but that guy was, I mean,
he's a gamer.
His nickname was The Answer. He was like as tough as they come for someone who's probably under six foot. Yeah, they say he was 6 foot. He was maybe a little under, but if you saw him play, he played like he was six, seven.
Dude, he had some serious hops for his size.
He had some serious speed. He has one of the most famous juke moves on Michael Jordan when he came in and kind of spun Michael Jordan around and scored on him. I mean, we all know who Allen Iverson is. And so he's kind of a giant in the game, came from that famed Georgetown program. Everything about Iverson was known. So I put him as one of the top two draft picks. And the other one, you know, most people know him on the TNT show, you know, which is Charles Barkley. For those of you who have not watched Charles Barkley play, I mean, Charles Barkley, I think he was 6'4", 6'5". At the biggest.
With his shoes on, yes.
With his shoes on. But that dude played like, big. You know. Yeah, he played big. He played monstrous. I mean, you would never know he was that small, quote unquote small, you know. But that dude was a beast. He was the fifth pick out of the 1984 draft. And I think he'd have had Auburn, correct.
Yep.
I think he'd have had at least one, you know, championship. If it wasn't for that one guy named Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan, you know, prevented a lot of people from getting NBA championships, you know, prevented Karl Malone from getting a championship, prevented Clyde Drexler from getting a championship. I mean, there's a lot of people that he prevented, and Barkley was a beast. I know that, you know, Shaq likes to give him a lot of crap about never winning a ring, but Barkley was one of my favorite players to watch. And with a nickname like the round mound of rebound, I mean, that when nicknames were very, very good, that was like a very good one there. So that was the top two picks that I had in the Philadelphia's organization's history. And then the top two busts that I had in their industry. One, I'll start with the easy one, which is Markel Fultz. You know, it was trust the process. You know, they got him. He didn't do so good. They ended up trading him to Orlando, I think, within like two or three seasons. He had some blockers mentally in terms of, some of the things that he had to do to play. In that particular draft, you know, they had the number one pick. And when you look at some of the players, they could have had Jason Tatum, right?
Wow.
Easily had Jason Tatum. They could have had De'Aaron Fox. They could have had Donovan Mitchell.
Wow.
They could have had Bam Adebayo. They could have had Lauri Markkanen, right? So these are just some of the players that the Sixers could have. I mean, that is a pretty much a who's who of today's players on that squad. And you know, that didn't work out. And then the other one was, you know, someone we like to pick on. You know, I think he was a bust. He was just not physically built, and that's Sean Bradley from BYU.
Oh, yeah.
He was the 1993 second-round pick. kind of very light guy in terms of weight, kind of got shoved around. He just didn't have, you know, kind of a Manute Bol type body. For those that know who Manute Bol is, you know, I'm sure most of you guys do. Yep. Just kind of guy that got pushed around, and he just never really amounted to much. I remember most of his time was over with the Dallas Mavericks, but, you know, he was drafted by the Sixers. And again, there's a little bit of a list here of players you could have had. You could have had Penny Hardaway, right? You could have had Vin Baker for those for Milwaukee, who was quite a player. Yep. Man, you could have had Sam Cassell, who had a very long career. And you could have had Jamal Mashburn, who was, you know, of the Dallas Kentucky. Mavericks.
Yep.
Yeah, out of Kentucky. So they're all solid players who probably would have contributed a lot better than Sean Bradley. Yeah.
Hey, real quick, do you remember seeing footage? They always bring it up on TNT, man, when Sean Bradley dunked on Charles Barkley, and I guess kneed him right in the midsection. And how Barkley kind of just acting like he got shot and he couldn't get up. And Shaq's always giving him crap, like, oh, he just goes down, like, oh. Remember that?
So
that was Sean Bradley.
When you look at Sean Bradley's knee, it's probably like a freaking Rambo knife, dude. That thing is all bones, bro.
Remember that?
It's all bones.
Remember that?
Barkley. The little round went down, dude.
Shaq always giving crap about that. It's hilarious.
Yeah. Well, Shaq gives him crap about everything. But yeah. And that is my coverage of the Sixers. Did you wanna go now for the East?
Yeah. So I think I'll go ahead and change it. But for the next ones, you can go ahead and change it for me, man. So I'll go ahead and
absolutely.
Do. So the first one I'll cover are the Miami Heat, man. So the Miami Heat. Finished, well, they have two draft picks. They have one in the first round, the 15th pick, and one in the second round in the 43rd pick. They finished 46-36. They finished as the eighth seed in the East, and they were a play-in team, and they lost in the first round to Boston. And Boston essentially got revenge for getting ousted by that same team the year before that. So, this Heat team is not far away, man. I mean, the thing is, they got decimated by injuries last season. And even with all those injuries, they had Jimmy Butler out for quite a bit of time. Terry Rozier, when, they traded for him, he was out for quite some time. Tyler Hero was out for a lot. Richardson was another one that was out. So, even with all those injuries, they still managed to finish 10 games above 500. And, that was good enough to be the East. But as far as what they need, okay, what they need is more of a traditional point guard. They have Terry Rozier. I wouldn't classify him as a traditional point guard. They have DeLon Wright, and then they have Tyler Hero, who plays it from time to time. All three of these guys are not really traditional point guards, so that's why I think that was what they would really need and benefit from getting in the offseason. The other thing that they need is another backup big, somebody that can back up Bam Adebayo. Maybe not necessarily do the exact same things that Bam Adebayo can do, but just somebody who can give him more of a breather. I mean, they had Kevin Love kind of spell him sometimes, this last season. They're vastly different players, but Kevin Love isn't really a center. He's kind of a small five, but, I think that they would just benefit from getting another big. So some of the trade targets to kind of fill some of these gaps, I guess they need point guard and they need a backup big. So for point guards, these are names that we've brought up multiple times, right? And, the more we bring up these names and when we have our draft show, we're going to increase our chances of being right? Because they're going to be repeated, right? But anyway, so the first guy I have on the list is Chris Paul. Chris Paul from the Warriors, I think, would be a very good fit for this team. He's as traditional of a point guard as point guard gets. He's the point god, as everybody calls him, right?
He's got that Miami Heat vibe. He kind of has that Miami Heat,
Yeah. Yeah. He would be a great fit. Maybe we trade Butler or get Butler for, but that's not going to happen. Anyway, but I'm just throwing that out. The other guy we've mentioned multiple times, and no matter where, wherever this guy goes, assuming that he is going to go, because the Atlanta Hawks have to pick between either this guy or Trae Young, but Dejounte Murray, he straight up is a Miami Heat type. I mean, he fits this team like a glove from a defensive philosophy. He is that guy. So he would fit very well with how they play as a team right now. And he's may not necessarily be a traditional point guard, but he definitely is more of a pass first guy than the other guys that they have on their team right now. So that's why I think he would be a great fit. Another guy we've already mentioned him multiple times. He's not initially a point guard, but he's kind of a combo guard. But another defensive-minded guy that kind of fits in the Miami Heat mold is Alex Caruso. Alex Caruso would be another ideal fit for this team. I mean, you can see these guys.
Tough defender, too. Tough defender.
Yeah, all three of these guys would be perfect fits for the Miami Heat. It's just a matter of whether they can make it work financially and all that stuff, right? Another guy that would be a great fit, he's kind of a combo guard as well, played for the Golden State Warriors 2 years ago. We lost him to the New York Knicks, and that's Dante DiVincenzo. Dante DiVincenzo is another guy that fits very well for this team and would be not necessarily a traditional point guard, but has the ability to be more of a pass-first guy than some of the guys that they have on their team right now. So to fit their backup center, or maybe even their, you know, backup center, you brought this guy up. The first time you brought him up is the backup center for the Indiana Pacers, Jalen Smith. Jalen Smith would be a good backup for Adebayo. So that's why I think he would be somebody that would be a good fit, and I think fits the mold for the Miami Heat, although he's a little bit more offensive-oriented than defensive-oriented, but very, very good player. The next guy is a guy that I know that you really, really like. And I would say that if they go after this guy, he would essentially probably take over as a starting center, and then they could probably move Bam Adebayo to power forward. And that person is Jared Allen. Yeah. Jared Allen would be a really good fit for the Miami Heat. So can you imagine having that guy with Bam Adebayo as the low block guys? You know, then you have Tyler Hero, you know, maybe a Chris Paul, right there, you already have a Jimmy Butler, depending if he stays. I mean, that's a pretty formidable team right there, right?
So well, I tell you, if Butler stays and they get Paul and they get Jared Allen, then ask me the question again if the Celtics have anything to fear, because not that I think that the Heat would be more talented than the Celtics, but the Heat's just that kind of team that just won't die.
I know.
They'll just slug it out with the Celtics until the Celtics yell uncle. You know, that's kind right. of the way. But yeah, so if they do that, then yeah, Miami's definitely one that I would consider as a threat.
And you know, I'm just throwing out names. I didn't necessarily look at financially, right? It takes a lot of time to go through. This is why GMs have a job that do this full time, right? We don't have that much time to figure all this financial stuff out. We're just throwing out names that make sense for them to consider.
Yeah. I'm trying to balance it a little bit, but you know, as we get to teams that, you know, I know which teams are a little more strapped than others, and so I know that it's going to be harder, like to get a player and not give up half your team or half your future, you know, to get that. But yeah, I agree with you. Correct. Some of this is fantasy, and you know who you could get and who would fit.
Right. Right. Hold on for a second. We got to change this thing, man, to Miami Heat. All right, I just changed it. So if you could do that to the banners, bro. Yeah. All right. So now we're going to the draft. All right. So they have the number 18 pick. We brought this guy up already in previous podcasts. So Isaiah Collier of USC, he's a 6'4 point guard, kind of compares to Jeff Teague and Eric Bledsoe. Both those guys are decent defensive players and good offensive players. Has definitely an NBA ready physical frame. Definitely can overpower defenders with his size. Has great court vision. Just needs to improve his jump shot a little bit. He only shoots like 34% for 3-point land, but you know, they can improve that in the pros, right? So Isaiah Collier would be a guy that I would target to fit that, fill that need of point guard, at number 18. For number 43, now at this point, I'm not necessarily going for like a point guard, maybe probably a player that kind of fits the mold of what the Miami Heat are trying to do. And that would be number 43 would be Peyton Sanford of Iowa. He's a 6'7". Small guard, shooting forward type of guy. And what's interesting is that this guy is probably considered the best shooter and free throw shooter in the draft. He has a 3-point shot at a 37.9 clip, but at 7.3 attempts per game. So this guy can shoot, man, and he's a willing passer, a tough defensive guy. He's actually was given the most harder defensive assignments when he was playing for Iowa, and he led the team also in rebounding. So this guy, you know, it seems to be fits right in the mold of the Miami Heat. And, you know, he's not initially an elite athlete, but he's good enough for the NBA. So that's who I think that they should pick at number 43. All right. As far as the top two draft picks in their history. So I'm going to go ahead and give you some honor. There's only one honorable mention. I only picked three here. So in 2017, Bam Adebayo with the 14th overall pick from Kentucky. He's honorable mention. But as far as their top two draft picks, And this is a, you know, this is a organization or a franchise that was established in 1988. So they don't have as long of a history as other franchises. They started at the same exact year as the Charlotte Hornets. So, but as far as, you know, that's why it's not going to be as deep as some other franchises as far as the number of picks that were given as honorable mention. But, so I already picked Bam Adebayo, but as far as their number one guy that I think it was their best draft pick of all time is in 2003, they picked with the fifth overall pick from Marquette. Future Hall of Famer, Dwayne Wade. So I picked him as the best draft pick that that franchise has had. And then the second one is in 1991 out of Michigan State with the fifth overall pick. This guy's not a Hall of Famer, but he was a hell of a good player, man. And that's Steve Smith. Steve Smith. You remember Steve Smith?
Yeah, I remember Steve Smith.
He's a guy that is, you know, on these announcements. He does have a lot of shows right now on NBA TVs. He's a color commentator at times as well for some of the games. But this guy was a hell of a player, man. So that's why those are the two that I picked as far as their best picks in their
history. He spent a bulk of his time with Atlanta, right? Because I remember him.
Yeah, he was Atlanta. And then he also played for the Spurs. I forgot who else, but Atlanta's most of the time. Yeah, that's where he played most of his career. So, okay, now going to their busts. So these are the honorable mentions, right? So in 2015, we have at a Duke with the 10th overall pick, Justice Winslow. All right. Now, the unfortunate thing here is I forgot to put some of the guys that they should have picked for this segment, but I did it for the other guys. So, but I'll go ahead and keep going. So, in 1992, the other guy that I picked, it was 12th overall out of USC. And this guy was more known because of his dunking ability and also was being compared to another prominent player in the NBA.
Baby Jordan,
Harold Miner. Harold Miner with the 12th overall pick was another guy that I picked as a bust. So in 1988, there's another guy. He used to play for the Warriors, by the way. I'm giving you a clue on this. Okay. He was a center out of Syracuse, and he was the 9th overall pick. Do you know who this is?
First name rhymes with Moni.
Yep. Ronnie Cicely.
Ronnie, whatever his name. At the risk of being a little less PC, rumor has it though that guy had like he had a lot of lady friends. We'll put it that way.
Oh, did he really?
Well, that's the rumor. Yeah,
he's not a bad looking guy. I think he's a Greek. I think he's Greek, if I remember correctly. That was his background.
He was quite the player, as we would say.
Oh wow, check him out. Yeah. Well, here's another guy who was quite the player, from what I've heard too. So in 1989, this is the last guy on my list. This fourth overall pick out of Michigan, small forward, and it was rumored that he had a little fling with the former vice president candidate, and I forgot her name. Glasses. John McCain. Anyway, the running mate of John McCain, Glenn Rice.
Oh yes, yes. The girl from Alaska.
I forgot her name.
Sarah Palin.
That's Sarah Palin. Yeah. So apparently, he had a little fling with her, man. Yeah. So, I picked two guys total, you know, players, right? In another form of the word of being players, right? So anyway, that's covering the Miami Heat. All right, so now my next team that I'm going to cover are the Orlando Magic. The Orlando Magic have the 18th pick, so first round pick, and then the 47th pick in the second round. They ended up the season at 47-35 as the fifth seed. They lost in the first round to the Cleveland Cavaliers. And, you know, I got to change my name here, so let me go ahead and do that. So hold on a second. I got to change to the Orlando Magic. All right. All right. So they lost to the Cleveland Cavaliers in the first round in seven games. They took them in seven, right? This was a great series, man. It was a really, really good series. But, you know, this team is not far, man. No, they're just really young, right? So, but the thing is, what's interesting is that they have the same exact need as the Miami Heat from a point guard standpoint. They need a true point guard on that team. They had Jalen Suggs, and they had the previous aforementioned Markelle Fultz as their point guards, right? Jalen Suggs is a good, decent point guard, but he's not like a prime. He's not a point guard, you know, pass first type of guy. He's a very defensive-minded guy, and he's a bigger guy, right? But I think, like, you know, some of these same guys that I mentioned for the Miami Heat as trade targets to fill this need as point guard would be like a Chris Paul would be one. Kyle Lowry would be another one. Those two guys would be good players for them to pursue because they need veterans. That's why I picked these guys as veterans. They're young. They need guys that have been there. They have a lot of playoff experience. And both those guys have a lot of playoff experience. They just need somebody to help them get through and be kind of like the Kyrie Irving was for the Dallas Mavericks, right? Yeah. Kind of that, somebody who has the knowledge and wherewithal and how to be a good pro or a good player in the playoffs and just know what it takes to win, even though the Dallas Mavericks didn't win, but they got to the finals, right? So, but that's what they need. They need a point guard that can that has a lot of playoff experience. Another need that they have is that they need more veteran depth with playoff experience, okay? So much like, you know, another team that I'm going to cover later, the Thunder are the exact same category. They're just very young. The Magic and the Thunder are very young teams, but again, they're not very far. They just need a couple players, and they're going to be right there. So the other guys that I put there that fit this kind of rotational depth with playoff experience would be Nicholas Batum. Nicholas Batum, you know, for the Sixers, he's had playoff experience with the Clippers as well as the Sixers. Bruce Brown, he has a championship with Denver Nuggets, right? He's also had playoff experience with the Pacers. He would be a well-coveted free agent, but a trade target or, you know, somebody that they could target to bolster their depth from a veteran standpoint. And the last guy would be another Denver Nugget, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. These guys, I think, would be good additions for the Magic because it would just give them, again, more depth and more experience. So, all right. So as far as, you know, they have the 18th and the 47th pick. So at the 18th pick, we've already talked about this. Again, this is kind of almost like a cookie cutter of the Miami Heat where I indicated Isaiah Collier would be a good fit for these guys. And they would also fit for the Miami Heat. So, excuse me, for the Orlando Magic. So, Isaiah Collier, we already talked about who he is and what he does. But another guy, in case that guy is gone, would be another guy by the name of Carlton Carrington out of Pittsburgh. He's a 6'5", 195-pound point guard. Kind of compares to a Sean Livingston and Spencer Dinwiddie. Okay, these guys are kind of bigger, you know, point guard types. You know, Sean Livingston, you know, we love him as a Warrior, man. He was a great bench help for the team, right? But just a good unselfish combo guard with size, good physical attributes for the NBA. He shows great composure and actually has maturity for an 18-year-old kid. He has a 6'9 wingspan. So that's what, you know, a lot of these scouts like. They like these lengthy guys, that, especially a point guard, right? That's a problem to be dealing with from a defensive standpoint when you're going up against something like this. So he has a good pull-up jumper, probably lacks maybe a good first step. He kind of prefers to do a pull-up shot rather than drive, but that's something they can develop, you know, as they get more experience in the NBA. So Carlton Carrington is a guy that I think they could pick if Isaiah Collier is not available. Okay, at number 47, I have Antonio Reeves. He's a 6'6", 185 shooting guard out of Kentucky. Compares to a Justin Holiday. Again, another former Warrior. Justin Holiday plays for the Denver Nuggets right now. Great scorer. What's interesting, let me tell you, this guy's highly efficient. This guy shot 51.2% from field goal percentage, 44.7% from three-point range, and shot 86.3% from the free throw line, which ranks as the best in college for all three categories combined. So this guy was a player, right? He has a good outside shooting, has developed a good runner in his game, can score at all three levels. He's a five-year player, so, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, a lot of these guys like these younger guys, so he's a 23-year-old guy, but, you know, he will be, actually he's 24, he's going to be entering the draft at 24 years old, but he looks like he can contribute right away, especially because he has that shooting ability, and shooting is valued in the NBA, especially if he can also play D. So, all right. As far as their top two draft picks in the history, the honorable mention, I have in 1990, I have Dennis Scott, 3D.
3D, yes.
Overall pick out of Georgia Tech.
Yes. Right?
Definitely one of the good picks that they've had. In 1993, they drafted this other player first overall, but never played for the team because he got traded to the Golden State Warriors.
And yes.
It's Chris Webber, right?
Yes.
He was so good. Anyway, the next guy I have here in 2014 as an honorable mention for the best draft picks in their history for the Orlando Magic, I have Aaron Gordon. He currently plays for the Denver Nuggets right now. He was the fourth overall pick out of Arizona. And then the last one I have as honorable mention is first overall pick out of Duke in 2022. And he's currently on the team right now, and that's Paolo Banchero. Now, their top two draft picks of all time. We all know who the first one's going to be, man. All right? In 1992, first overall pick out of LSU.
Yes,
you know
the Diesel.
Shaq, Shaquille O'Neal. By far, their best pick ever, right? And so the next guy I have is another center in 2004. And Shaq used to always give this guy a lot of, you know, crap, you know, when he was covering him.
Superman 1 and Superman 2.
Yeah, exactly. First overall pick out of high school, and that's Dwight Howard. So that's who I picked as the top two draft picks in the Orlando Magic history. And then the top two busts. Now this one, I...
Real quick, Eddie. Those are two really good picks to not have ever won a championship as an organization.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that a trouble?
I don't want to rub it in Orlando Magic fans' face because that's not what I'm talking
about. They faced the Houston Rockets, and Akeem
schooled them, but there's another connection. Had Jerry West not been the Shaq whisperer and pulled them out of Orlando, maybe they would have won something. In a couple seasons down the road, but
they were on the rise, man, for sure. Yeah. So then as far as their top two busts in their history. So I only had two guys picked here. So in 1998, out of Utah, he was a center. He was a career 4.9 point average, and that's Michael Doliak. Do you remember that guy?
Yes, I remember.
Remember the name, right? Yes, but some of the guys that they could have had were Ricky Davis, Teron Liu, Al Harrington, and Rashard Lewis. Okay, so those are guys that they could have picked instead of Michael Doliak. And then the next guy that I picked in 2018 out of Texas, sixth overall pick, center, and that's Mohamed Bamba.
Does he have a song?
Maybe.
Does he really? I'll have to find it someday, but yeah, he has a song.
All right. So anyway, so they, you know, the guys that they could have had instead of Mo Bamba would be, Wendell Carter, who currently is a starting center right now for the Orlando Magic. You have Colin Sexton, who is the starting shooting guard out of Utah. You have Mikal Bridges, who's been talked about a lot in our podcast as a potential good trade target for a good 3-and-D guy. And then another guy, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. They could have had him too, right? Yeah. Miles Bridges, Dante DiVincenzo. These are all guys they could have had, man. So
pretty good draft.
Yeah, I know. And then, the last guy I put as an honorable mention, I forgot I should have read that one first. But do you remember a guy he changed his name to Bison Daly. Do you remember this guy?
I vaguely.
Okay. So in 1991, it was Bison Daly. He changed his name. He was formerly known as Brian Williams out of Arizona.
Yes.
Overall.
Yes. Player. I remember him now? Brian Williams.
Yeah.
Do you have what college he was from? Was he
Arizona? He was Arizona.
So he
didn't live up to, you know, his billing, because, you know, as a 10th overall pick, you should be doing something. But, you know, he got into mental problems and, you know, I think there's some kind of, you know, he went missing and all that. You know, I don't know whatever really happened to him. But anyway, they could have had Greg Anthony. They could have had Dale Davis. They could have had Rick Fox. Okay. Those are some players that, you know, they could have had instead of Bison Daly or Brian Williams. So that's it for my segment, man. So we have two more for you and then two more for me. And we're definitely over time like we always are, man. So tell me who you want to go to first, man.
Let's go to the Grizzlies, Memphis.
Memphis Grizzlies. All right. All right.
So starting off with the Memphis Grizzlies, in terms of roster needs, again, similar to the Knicks, stay healthy. They've had so many injuries, so many things. I mean, I guess I should have put stay healthy, don't do stupid things, you know, because Ja is, you know, definitely in that bucket.
And yeah, for sure.
So, you know, they need a full season of Ja. So they also, they need a starting center. I think
they lost Steven Adams. He's gone.
Correct. So they need a starting center. They need, I think, some additional ball handling. And they also need a starting caliber wing. They got some pretty good players, but I think they need a wing defender there. Along those lines, a couple of trade targets that I have for them, and I think these are some of these guys that you like. Well, I know Jonas Valanciunas is one that you really like, and I think that would be a good guy to get as a starting center. The other one is what I lovingly known as Jokic's twin, which is Josef Nurkic. The guy that Denver also, so he's a potential. And then there's Nick Claxton as well. So those are players that I think they could target, that they could pick up. I think this is one of the teams similar to, I mean, they're not quite as young as Orlando, but they got a lot of room of things that they can do. They can take on some salary. They can do some things. And I think that those guys are some players that they could definitely benefit from. And those are starting center quality players.
Yeah, for sure. And out of those guys, I think the one that fits best for them would probably be like a Nick Claxton.
Nick Claxton is probably the best fit.
I think.
I agree.
Yeah, because they also have Brandon Clark, who always was injured, you know, out of Gonzaga. And then they also have a Triple J, right? Jaren Jackson.
I always thought we could move him to like a power forward.
Yeah, he's more of a power forward type. He's a seven footer, man. He's a big dude, man. So he's a center slash power forward, but he plays more like a power forward than a center. Yeah.
Yeah. And in terms of picks, they have, they have two picks. Do they have two picks? No, they have three picks. Pardon me. They have the ninth pick in the first round. They have the 39th pick in the second round. And they have the 57th pick in the second round. In terms of ninth pick, I believe these are players that we've already, well, Dalton Connect is someone that they could definitely pick up in the ninth. And that's when we were talking about kind of starting caliber wing. Connect is definitely in that conversation. That's somebody that that could be there. In terms of another one is Ron Holland. Have we discussed Ron Holland yet?
I don't think so. No.
Out of the G League Ignite, he's a small forward, 6'6", 204 pounds. Compared to Cam Whitmore, you know, high on the potential side. So those are two players that they could look to take in that particular spot. Moving down to the 39th pick. A couple of guys that are actually three guys that I've identified. One is Jonathan Mogbo out of San Francisco. So he's kind of a local guy for us. Power forward, 6'6", junior, 22 years old, been compared to Kenneth Faried. For those that remember Kenneth Faried.
Oh, yeah.
In Denver. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's more of a low post scorer. He's limited in terms of his shooting. So he's more of a low block type of guy, but kind of a backup. To Jackson, so something along those lines. Another one for the 39th pick is Enrique Freeman out of Akron, also a power forward, 6'7", 23 years old, so more on the older side. He's a senior. He was one of the most productive players during scrimmages. He's projected as a second-round pick, but he's been impressing people with his shooting range and some of his finishing skills and some rebounding. And then the third guy that I have potentially for that 39th pick is Keshawn Johnson out of Arizona.
Oh, yeah, we brought him up.
Yep, brought him up already. Yep. And you mentioned compared to Robert Covington, you know, he's got really big hands. He's got a 42-inch vertical, so he's quite athletic. Maybe worth taking a risk on the second round. And then their last pick, which is the 57th pick, second round, I got Isaac Jones potentially out of Washington State. Also another power forward, 6'8". He has the ability to guard bigs and wings, plays with some athleticism. So that's somebody that, you know, could fill that wing spot as well. And then last is Juan Nunez. He's out of, I'm going to butcher this, Radio Farm Ulm, point guard, maybe a backup point guard, 6'3", 180 pounds, 20 years old. He's from Spain. They have him for he's more of a playmaker, kind of elite passing skill type of guy. You know, you were bringing up some of those other teams that may need a traditional point guard. I don't think he's obviously not the veteran that Chris Paul is or some of these other players are. But, you know, he's along that mold, more of a passer and a shot creator than an actual scorer. Moving down to the top two draft picks in their history. So some notables here. Was John Morant, Rudy Gay, Sharif Abdul-Rahim, Mike Bibby. Most people don't remember this, but Mike Bibby was drafted by the Grizzlies, not by the Kings. Those are some notables. But the two players that I have as their top picks. The first one I think is fairly obvious, which is Pau Gasol from Barcelona. Yep. You know, two-time champion, wasn't with the Grizzlies, but he is a two-time champion. Six-time All-Star, you know.
Hall of Famer.
Yep, Hall of Famer. Traded for the Lakers with his brother, right?
Marc Gasol,
who had a pretty good career as a Memphis Grizzly. And so Pau Gasol is the first one. And then the second one is a personal favorite of mine. And, you know, he's had a long career. I think most people would
consider Mike Conley. I know you're talking about, man. Yes. It's Mike Conley.
Yep. Mike Conley. Correct. Correct. Yep. Most people might consider putting John Morant, but given some of his, some of the activities that he's had and some of the suspensions he's had, I didn't think, you know, at this point in his career, obviously if he turns things around and, you know, I think he has the potential to be one of the top two picks of Memphis Grizzlies, but it's still early in his career where I would put Mike Conley above him from Ohio State. He was in the 2007 draft. He was the fourth pick. You know, he's all-star, all-defensive second team. You know, he's just an overall good, solid player. And now the top two busts in their history. All right. So this was rough in terms of I'm going to save the rougher one for last. So I'm going to go the first one with Tony Rotten. Now, what a name. Tony Rotten.
Roten?
Yeah, Roten. Roten, yeah, W-R-O.
Yeah, I remember. Yep.
Yeah, Roten. Well, Rotten, 2012, 25th pick. Now, some people would say, 25th pick, that's pretty far down the line, you know, isn't right. that a – But the dude, he appeared in 35 games only for the Grizzlies.
Oh, wow.
Scored 91 points in those games. I did the average. That's 2.4 points per game.
Wow.
Right? Only had 43 assists. He didn't make it to the second season, was traded by training camp. Now, because he was later in the draft, I looked at players later in the draft. Obviously, I had to. And there was two players that the Grizzlies could have had in that draft. One was a player by the name of Draymond Green.
Ooh.
And another player was by the name of Chris Middleton. Each one of those players they could have picked up, which were
way better than this guy.
Way better than Rodney. 35 games.
Yeah.
The next one is a name that most people will know is Hasheem Thabeet.
Oh, yeah. Yes. For sure.
So he was the second pick in the 2009 draft. In his rookie year, he averaged 3.1 points, 3.6 rebounds, 1.3 blocks, which that number is pretty good. But he played 13 minutes a game. He lasted until his second year, and then he got shipped to Houston for Shane Battier. So he played a season and a half, let's call it, for the second pick, right, which is rough, which is equivalent to what the Warriors did with Wiseman, pretty much, more or less.
Pretty much.
But listen to this list of players they could have had, okay? Whew, lordy. James Harden.
Oh, man.
Steph Curry.
Oh, man.
DeMar DeRozan.
Oh, Jesus.
Jrue Holiday.
Jeez.
They could have had any of those.
All those guys are all going to be Hall of Famers.
Maybe
DeMar DeRozan is questionable, but he's marginal.
He is questionable, but I wouldn't be mad at him making all.
Maybe.
Yeah. Two of them are champions.
Yep.
You know, James Harden, you know, speaks for himself. I mean, it's just, that's a phenomenally horrible bust. I mean, that's just, wow.
I agree.
I feel for you Memphis fans out there. Woo. You know, but trust me. Whenever you win your championship, all of this will be forgotten. Trust me, I know from experience. All right.
It's like the Greg Oden pick right there, man. Almost.
Yes. Almost. Yeah. All right. So now moving on to the Denver Nuggets.
All right.
So the Denver Nuggets. This is one of those teams that pretty much has absolutely zero room to pick up players. You know, they're coming off of a championship the previous season. They're pretty tight on salary. So I kept all of that in mind. Their primary goal here is to keep the starting five together, right? They got a couple of players on their roster that Contavious Caldwell-Pope has an option to stay for $15.4 million. I'm sure that they're hoping that he'll exercise that option. Don't know if he will. Obviously, he can become a free agent. My guess is that he probably could make more than the 15-4 that he's scheduled to make. So that's one question. The other one is Reggie Jackson, who has a player option of $5.25 million. Mm-hmm. So those are a couple of players that I think that, you know, my opinion would be that Denver prefers they stay than go. but don't know what they're going to do. So they have very, very limited options. A couple of trade targets that I had, you know, that I was looking at in terms of maybe backup point guard, backup center, some players that maybe they could fit in somehow. So in terms of the backcourt, one was, you mentioned him earlier, was DeLon Wright. So maybe you can bring him in as a backup point guard. Another one is a guy that we know intimately well. He's been moving around here for the last couple of seasons, which is Patrick Beverley. So that is someone that maybe they could bring in, provide a little bit of defense, you know, help out with, you know, just kind of some veterans. I mean, obviously they're champions. They have enough veterans. They have enough experience. But those are two guys in the backcourt that I thought maybe they could. And again, both of them are free agents, so that's less of a trade than it is a picking up. But if you can figure something out due to the salary cap, if you can do some sort of trade. And right. then the other one is backup center, right? You know, we saw in this last playoffs, Jokic was kind of out there all the time. I believe they have DeAndre Jordan on that team, if I'm not mistaken.
DeAndre Jordan and Zeke Nnaji. Those are the
and they didn't seem to want to play him at all.
I don't
know what those reasons were. But a backup center that they could look at is someone like Andre Drummond, you know, that could come in and maybe give Jokic some time off. He's a decent defensive player. And so that's one. And then Mason Plumlee was another one that I was
Mason Plumlee's a good one.
Yeah. So those two guys were players that we're looking at as trade targets. Again, I'm taking into consideration they're at the max, right? They're at the aprons and so they're going to be very limited as to what they can do.
Yep.
In regards to their drafts, so they have the 28th pick and the 56th pick in this draft. For the 28th pick, I really only identified one guy, which was Darren Holmes out of Dayton. He's a center. So again, if they can't pick up a backup center, maybe that's the guy that they pick up. He's 6'9", 236 pounds, so a little undersized as a center. He's 21 years old, a junior. He has pro comparisons of a guy that we know is Trayce Jackson-Davis. So if he's anything like him, you know, I think that would be a good pickup for Denver and pick him up as a backup. Yep. And then the other couple of picks that I had was for the 56th pick, which is in the second round. One is Oso Iguodaro out of Marquette. He's a power forward center. Again, looking at the backup center position, he's 6'11", 21 years old. He's a senior, been compared to Brandon Clark. He's got some pretty good ball handling and passing for the front court, which surprise, surprise, who's that? Someone like Jokic, right? Who has good passing. So maybe that's something they could kind of get a mini Jokic going in there to kind of keep the offense the same going through the center potentially. And then the other one is AJ Mitchell out of UC Santa Barbara. He's a point guard. Again, we talked about that a little bit back the backcourt. He's a 6'3", 187 junior. He's a Belgian. You know, potentially looking at him as a backup point guard in the 56th slot. All right. Going back into their draft picks in their history. So I didn't put any notables because to me, there's really only two guys in Denver's history that you're going to put here. And there are two guys that are on their current roster.
Yeah.
The first one is Jamal Murray, right? For sure. He was the seventh pick of the 216 draft, led him to a championship, was part of the all rookie second team. You know, and then the other one, of course, is Jokic, right? The Joker, 2014. And this is just phenomenal. 41st pick. I mean, you know,
that's
I mean, that's just insane, right? And when you think of some of those players, you know, Manu Ginobili was a late first rounder. Tony Parker was a late first rounder. Draymond Green was a second rounder. Middleton was a second. I mean, you can really, if there's some talent in the second round, if you get lucky and if you do, you know, enough research. But Jokic obviously is an NBA champion. He's a Finals MVP. He's
three-time
league MVP. Exactly. Six-time All-Star. I mean, those are by far the top two draft picks in the history of the Nuggets.
Dude, I mean, that's incredible. That I don't think we're ever going to see that again in the second round with somebody that with that many accolades in the second round with the 41st pick. I don't think we're ever going to see that again.
You know, maybe for a future podcast, we can start looking at how many NBA MVPs have they been
in the second round
that weren't drafted in the first round. No, keep in mind the NBA back in the day,
like seven rounds.
Eight or nine rounds, right? So there might be a player in there somewhere that we don't remember or
that
might be a fun activity kind of.
We could probably do that for next week because we're only going to cover six teams next week. But But at the rate we're going, that six teams is going to cover an hour anyway. So
that's true. People are going to be like, finally, it's over in an hour. They keep promising.
And it's right.
All right. Now moving on to the top two busts in their history. So this guy, and I'm always going to butcher his name. He was a Warrior, but you remember him. Nikolaos Skidishvili. You remember him?
Yeah. Nikolaos Skidishvili.
Correct. Yep. He was from the 2002 draft. He was a fifth pick. He played 4 years but with the Nuggets, but he never managed to average even 5 points a game. So he was just not successful. In that particular draft, they could have had Caron Butler, Amari Stoudemire, or Carlos Boozer. Those were three particular picks in that draft. So that he wasn't like a horrible pick since he played 4 years, like not like some of those other players we've been discussing, but overall right. just wasn't worth it. And then the second player that I have is Julius Hodge from NC State.
Oh, my God, who's that? I don't even know who that is.
2005, he was the 20th pick. He was shot 14 games into his rookie season, right? And so that derailed his career.
But
he was only averaging 2.4 minutes per game even prior to that. So he wasn't really on point, but that pretty much ended his career. And in terms of what they could have had, the only one that I could find after that draft that was just of significant note was David Lee in the 2005 draft. They could have had him. So, I mean, that's circumstance. That's sort of like Sweetney as well. You know, it's not his. I mean, I don't know the circumstances in which he got shot, but, you know, that's obviously an outside impact that impacted his career. Right. And so, you know, but he just never got back on track. And those are my picks.
All right, man. So I'm going to wrap it up with my last two. I have the Phoenix Suns, and then I will also cover – let me just go ahead and do that. I will also cover the Oklahoma City Thunder. All right, these are the last two, audience. All right, so the Suns, all right, so they have the 22nd pick, so they have a first-round pick, and they have nothing in the second round, so they have one pick in this upcoming draft. They finished 49-33. They were the sixth seed. They were ousted by Minnesota Timberwolves in the first round. They also fired Frank Vogel, so now they have hired Mike Budenholzer. And Mike Budenholzer was the former coach of the Milwaukee Bucks as well as the Atlanta Hawks. So this guy's a defensive-minded coach, so he's going to be more on the mold of like a Tom Thibodeau. It's going to be interesting to see how they shape the roster now that Mike Budenholzer is now the coach.
Champion coach, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. He's a championship coach. That's right. Yeah. So you know, when they first assembled this team, you know, it looked pretty formidable, man. When they had Durant, Booker, Beal, I mean, when they put this roster together, they're like, I immediately thought they were going to be contenders. I think everybody thought they were going to be contenders. I mean, they were almost trying to be the Warriors 2.0 with Klay, Durant, and Curry, right? When they formed these three shooting, these three really good shooters, just like the Warriors did in 2019. But you know, what they really had, what really resulted in this is that they found out that they really need a true point guard, a really true point guard. And, you know, the three of the teams that I've covered, the Heat, the Orlando Magic, and now the Suns, they all need a point guard. So it's going to be interesting who they go out and get, right? The other thing that they really need is another rotational scoring wing to back up Kevin Durant. I mean, it's going to be hard to replace a Kevin Durant when he's off the floor, but you need somebody who can, you know, you can see right now that the guys that they have Royce O'Neal, they have Josh Okogie. Those are the guys who back up Kevin Durant. They're defensive minded guys first, which is good, right? And Budenholzer is going to love that, but they need scoring, man. They need some scoring to help when Kevin Durant's off the floor. And then Devin Booker and, you know, Bradley Beal, we found out that, you know, he's unfortunately has some injuries that he's had to deal with, you know, in this offseason or the last season that kind of curtailed their hopes to be advancing further in the playoffs. So, but that's what I think. I think they need a backup point guard or a good starting point guard and some rotational wing scoring with some defense. So to fit that mold, the trade targets that I have, right? Actually, free agent and trade targets, right? So as far as free agents, I have Malik Beasley. He fits that mold. Kelly Oubre fits that mold. as far as the a point guard. He's not necessarily a traditional point guard, but could fit the mold and does pretty well. But at least for the Raptors, it's Emmanuel Quickley. He's actually a decent shooter and a decent distributor. So I think he'd be a good fit for him. An older guy, you know, he's been around the league, Jay Crowder, who plays for the Bucks. I think he, you know, he played for the Suns before. Why not bring him back? I think Frank Vogel likes him. He'd be a good fit for them. And then as far as trade targets, we talked about, you know, these point guard types already multiple times. I think it could either be Trae Young or DeJounte Murray of the Hawks. One of those two would be a good fit as a point guard for this team. Another guy, we've already brought him up multiple times, is Alex Caruso of the Bulls. You know, great defender, decent distributor, a good rebounder. He's just a good all-around player. And then the last guy, which is, you know, he already played for this team before, and he currently plays for the Warriors, and that's Chris Paul. Chris Paul would be a really good fit for this team, man. So those are the guys I think that would address the roster needs the best.
You know, real quick, I wanted to touch on something. You know, the one thing I'll give LeBron kudos is he's the only guy that I can remember in recent history that has built super teams and has been able to win a championship out of it. But everywhere else that I've seen it, it's failed. Brooklyn tried, it failed. Phoenix is trying, it's failed so far.
Right.
The Clippers have tried, it's failed. Like, if you look at the champions, you know, the Boston Celtics are around Tatum and Brown, and then they kind of built around that. The Warriors, right. You know, were the three, and they built around that. You know, the Denver Nuggets are around Murray and Jokic, and they built around that. And that seems to be the way more successful formula.
Approach.
Yeah, approach. And so, you know, I still kind of when I see these super teams, you know, I'm always reluctant to say that they're going to win anything because it takes a lot of factors to do that. And
yeah.
So I think Phoenix is the latest victim of that attempted formula. But I wonder how many times that formula's got to fail before people start figuring out that maybe that's not the way
the best approach. Yeah. Just bring a bunch of free agents together and see if we can win a championship, right?
Yeah.
Like you said, LeBron James is the only one that really accomplished that with the Miami Heat, really.
He did it with the Heat, and then to some degree he did it with the Lakers, you know? So,
right.
You know, right. And so, so anyway, I just wanted to point that out because, you know, you had mentioned it. And so, yeah, it was surprising that Phoenix didn't do more than they did, but to some degree I wasn't surprised because it seems to fail more often than not.
Yeah, but I think a good point guard would definitely help that team. I mean,
absolutely. They never should have got rid of Chris Paul.
I agree.
So I mean, that's just fundamental. They never should have, but you know, if they could get him back, I think that would be welcome. But my guess is he's going to move on to other things at this point.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, so all right. So they have one pick, the 22nd pick in the draft. So two guys that I think that could fall to him. We've already mentioned the Devin Carter out of Providence. He's a guy that compares to Ayo Dosunmu of the Chicago Bulls. This guy's he's an excellent athlete, 42 inch vertical leap. Has excellent floor energy, good vision, timing. The only thing he needs to improve on is to be a good 3-and-D type of guy. He needs to get his 3-point shooting up, but he did definitely improve it from 38%. From 30% to 38%. So he definitely helped in that level. But he's definitely considered one of the best and most feisty defenders in this draft class. So Devin Carter would definitely bolster the Phoenix Suns if they manage to get him at the 22nd pick. But if he's gone, you know, maybe another guy to back up, you know, like I said, when Kevin Durant's off the floor or Devin Booker's off the floor or Bradley Beal's off the floor, assuming they're all still going to be together, Jared McCain, we brought him up multiple times in different teams out of Duke. This guy's a shooter, right? And shooting is valued in the NBA as long as you can play some D. This guy's only 6'3", though, so that's kind of a liability. But he can fit the mold as potentially a point guard in case they're not able to get a free agent or a trade that they desire. So Jared McCain could be somebody that they might want to target. So, all right, so going on to the top two draft picks in their history. So I'm going to go ahead and give you some honorable mentions here. So in 2015, I have Devin Booker out of Kentucky with the 13th pick, shooting guard. In 1999, I have Amari Stoudemire. He came out of high school as the number 9 pick, power forward. Then I have Cedric Ceballos in 1990 at Cal State Fullerton, man. I didn't know Cal State Fullerton actually had anybody go in the pros, man. That's crazy. Yeah. Anyway, he was the number 48 pick. So that's actually pretty good value right there. And he was a power forward. And then the last honorable mention before I mention the two guys that I think are the best, in 1988, someone out of Central Michigan with the number 14 pick, he was a shooting guard, small forward, Dan Marley.
Dan Marley.
So as far as their best picks in their franchise history, so the first one I have, this happened in 1977. He's a Hall of Famer out of Carolina with the number 5 pick, small forward, Walter Sweet D. Davis. He's definitely the best, probably their best draft pick so far in their history. And then the second guy, maybe people could argue this guy might be even better than Walter Davis from a accolade standpoint, but I don't know. That'd be hard to compare. But anyway, this guy was drafted in 1996 out of Santa Clara. Number 15 pick, point guard.
Yes, from Canada. From Canada, right.
So Steve Nash. So that's what I have as the two top draft picks, Walter Davis and Steve Nash.
Did you mention Kevin Johnson? Was Kevin Johnson in there at all?
No, I did not. I don't think he was drafted by them.
I don't remember if he was or wasn't. I don't think so,
but
I'm not putting you on the spot. I was just,
I'll have to double check that. I don't think so, but anyway, cause I probably would have put him on there. All right. So as far as busts, so I'm going to go ahead and work my way backwards. So, meaning from the latest to earliest. So in 1987, we have Armin Gilliam out of UNLV with the number two pick. You remember Armin Gilliam?
I remember him. Yes.
All right. So, he didn't pan out for being a number two pick, man, but you know, the guys that they could have had, Scottie Pippen, Kenny Smith. Actually, I actually do have Kevin Johnson here at number 7. See, he wasn't drafted. He wasn't drafted by them. So Kevin Johnson at number 7.
Johnson, yes.
Yep. Reggie Miller at number 11. And then Mark Jackson at number 18. So they missed a lot of players, man, in picking Armin Gilliam. All right. So in 2013, I have with the number five pick out of Maryland, and he's still playing in the NBA right now. It's only, you know, that's only 11 years. Alex Len plays right now, I think, for the Sacramento Kings. But who they bypassed in order to take Alex Len at number 5, they could have had C.J. McCollum at number 10, Steven Adams, who fell at number 12, at number 15, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
I heard of that guy. He's pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. At number 17. But the 17th pick was Dennis Schroeder, still playing in the NBA, of course. And then at number 27, Rudy Gobert. These are all guys they could have taken instead of Alex Len, right? All right. So the worst two draft picks in their history. The worst one right now, in my opinion, was out of Europe with the number 4 pick in 2016, Dragan Bender. You remember him?
Yes.
All right. Yes. So who they could have had? They could have had Jamal Murray. They could have had Jakob Poeltl. They could have had Domantas Sabonis. They could have had Pascal Siakam. Wow. They could have had DeJounte Murray. Wow. But they picked Dragan Bender, man. So, all right.
Where is old Dragan nowadays?
Probably somewhere in Europe, man. Yeah. No. But anyway, so the last guy in 2017 is Josh Jackson. I mentioned him before in an earlier, I forgot when I mentioned him, but you remember him from having the big old fro. Anyway, out of Kansas. That's Josh Childress. Josh Sorry. Childress. That was Josh Childress. Josh Jackson Josh. Was, this is Josh yeah. Jackson. Yeah. So out of Kansas, he's the number 4 pick. And so he didn't necessarily, I don't know if he's still playing in the NBA. I don't even remember.
I remember he got traded. Around. I was trying to remember to who, but yeah, I remember.
Yeah, but I mean, that's only 7 years ago. Yeah. Right? So, I don't know. Josh Jackson, I don't know.
No, I'm pretty sure he's out of the league.
Yeah. Okay. So who they could have had? De'Aaron Fox, Lauri Markkanen, Malik Monk, Donovan Mitchell, Bam Adebayo, Jarrett Allen, OG Anunoby, Derek White, Josh Hart.
Jeez.
Is that crazy, man?
On and on and on. That's a starting five of its own right there.
Man, isn't that crazy, man? So, but that's it, man. So, so my last team to cover, I'm going to go ahead and do it here, bro. So since I'm already here, I'm going to go ahead and put, it's the Oklahoma City Thunder This is my last pick, or my last team I'm going to cover. And I think you got it, right? You got the
Yeah, I got it right on.
Thank you, man. Thank you. All right. So Oklahoma City Thunder, they have one draft pick in the, they had the 12th pick in the first round. They were the number one seed in the West, in the daunting West. They were the number one seed. They had a 57-25 record. They were ousted by the Mavericks in the second round of the playoffs. Roster needs. This team is not far at all, man. They are, they only really need one or two veteran rotational pieces that has significant playoff experience. That's all they really need. They just lack experience. They need more experience than, you know, more playoff experience than maybe like a Gordon Hayward can provide to them, because that's who they have right now as their veteran to help them out, right? But I'm looking for somebody who has a more playoff experience than Gordon Hayward. They also need, a better point guard. Right now, Josh Giddey is their point guard, and he's a decent point guard. You know, I mean, he's a pass first type guy. He doesn't have a really good shot, but he's a big dude. He's like 6'7", 6'8". I mean, he stands out on the floor. He's a big dude. But I think he's more of a backup point guard type, in my opinion. More of a matchup problem for the second unit when he's playing. So, but they started playing him like that more and more in the playoffs. He was coming off the bench more and more.
Yeah.
So as far as meeting this rotational piece need, with playoff experience. So I have two trade targets that they should consider, or free agents. These are trades, free agents that they should consider. OG Anunoby. Okay. Defensive minded guy to the New York Knicks. He has playoff experience with the Raptors as well as the Knicks. We have Nicholas Batum, already aforementioned Nicholas Batum in another segment with another team, and that's for the Clippers and Sixers. He has playoff experience there. We have Bruce Brown of the Raptors, Pacers, Nuggets. Great experience there. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, we already brought him up, another team as well for the Nuggets, and he has, you know, a championship, right, and playoff experience. And then other guys with playoff experience, so Tobias Harris would be a good fit for the Sixers. Kyle Lowry, you know, another point guard with some experience for the Sixers. You know, he played for the Raptors and, you know, played for the Knicks.
What about a homecoming, Eddie?
Chris, wait. Thunder. Wait. Oh, are you talking about Russell Westbrook?
No. I'm thinking of a certain, you know, forward that plays for Phoenix that may want to come home and
Are you talking about Kevin Durant?
Yeah.
Hey, you know, I mean, that's another good pick too, man. I mean, I didn't think about him. That's a good
one. Well, if you think about it, you know, if Phoenix is going to rebuild, why not
get a bunch of draft picks, right? They have a bunch of draft picks that they can go ahead and. That's a good sneaky one. I didn't think about that one, man.
Yeah.
So I have a Kyle Lowry's one, and Chris Paul was the other one to fit that bill. But Kevin Durant is a good sneaky. Kevin Durant, DeJounte Murray,
are
good fits for everybody, right?
Of course. But I'm curious, you know, for sentimental reasons, if Durant might want to come back and get those fans a championship.
Right. All right, man. So these are the last. So as far as the draft, who I think might fall to him at the number 12 pick, the guy that I think that would probably fall that seems to be a pretty good prospect is a guy by the name of Nikola Topic. He's a 6'6" point guard out of Serbia. He's 19 years young. He's compared to this guy, Vasile Micic, who is currently for the Hornets. Backup point guard, but he has good shooting ability. So, but this guy plays at a high pace, has a high basketball IQ. He's considered to be a really, really good pick and roll situation type of player because he makes good decisions, in the pick and roll as well as in the open floor. Great finisher with both hands. The only thing he needs to do is work on his 3-point shot consistency. But this guy's 6'6", you know, and being athletic like he is a good pick for them. So that's why I picked them, to add more, you know, depth from a youth standpoint. You know, they don't need to do this. Yeah. So you might be right that they should probably just package some of these guys to get some players because they have a lot of youth that a lot of teams would value, right? And they can just trade this pick along with one of their other guys from their bench and then probably get someone like a Kevin Durant or somebody else, like a, you know, Paul George or whoever, right? Because it would be a Paul George homecoming for them too because Paul George played for the Thunder as well. All right. So the top two draft picks in their history. Now, if you recall, audience, they were previously the Seattle Supersonics. They moved to OKC in 2008. So, and that was the year right after Kevin Durant got drafted out of Texas. And then they moved right after to OKC. So Durant actually played for the Seattle Supersonics for 1 year. But anyway, all right. So as far as their honorable mentions, So I'm going to work my way. I'll work my way backwards. So we have in 1985, we have Xavier McDaniel. Remember him?
The X-Man.
Yeah. The fourth overall pick out of Wichita State. Then we have, oh, another one. I should have mentioned this guy first. 1977, Hall of Famer, ninth overall pick. This guy went to Illinois Wesleyan University. Hall of Famer, Jack Sigma, 1977. Jack Sigma. 1987, with the fifth overall pick at his University of Central Arkansas. Never played for this team, but he got traded to Chicago. And we all know who this is, the running mate of Michael Jordan. It's Scottie Pippen, right? So that's
the ultimate Robin. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Then, in 1987, the same draft year, with the ninth overall pick out of Alabama, we have Derek McKee. For Seattle Supersonics. They also
solid player.
Yeah. It also played for Indiana. Then, in 1989, we had, with the 17th overall pick out of high school, Trinity Valley Community College. Actually, it was a community college, not high school. It was Sean Kemp. So, you can see they picked a bunch of really good players, man. Another guy, this is more recent. So we have, these are again, honorable mentions. Okay. In 2008, we have Russell Westbrook, fourth overall pick out of UCLA, likely to be a future Hall of Famer for sure. Even though he doesn't, hasn't won a championship yet. Or has he won a championship? Did he ever win one? No, he hasn't won one yet. Okay. So then we have another future Hall of Famer, in 2009. Third overall pick out of Arizona State. You know who this is?
What year?
2009. Third overall pick, Arizona State. The beard, bro.
Oh, yeah, James Harden. Thank you.
James Harden. All right. So, I mean, you can see it. They've drafted pretty well for the Seattle Supersonics combined with the Thunder. They've had some pretty good teams, man. Good players, I should say. So, but the two top draft picks in their history. In 1990, this is a guy that we talked about in a previous segment that I actually interacted with, at Macy's. Overall pick, Oregon State, Hall of Famer Gary Payton. The glove, who's a kid plays for the Warriors, the Gary Payton the second. So, all right.
One of the most gifted trash talkers in the history of the NBA.
Absolutely. Big time, man. Big time. He just got in people's heads the way he talked trash, man. All right. So then, and the last one I have is, for the second best pick for in the history of the Seattle Supersonics / Oklahoma City Thunder is in 2007, future Hall of Famer Kevin Durant. Future Hall of Famer Kevin Durant out of, University of Texas with the second overall pick. Mm-hmm. Top two busts. And there's only two because looking at that list of all the people they've had, they've drafted pretty damn well. These guys, it was hard to find, but I picked two guys that I thought made sense. So the guy that I have in 2004 was a guy by the name of Robert Swift with the 12th overall pick. He came out of high school as a center, just never really amounted to anything. And then the last one is in 2006 was Mohamed Sanou with the 10th overall pick out of Senegal. So that's it, man. I mean, we covered the draft preview, man. We finished it, man.
we got six more teams, but yeah.
Yeah, we got six more teams next week. That's right. But as far as for this segment, we finished it, man. So we're done for this segment. So we covered three topics for this show, episode 12. We covered the Jerry West, he just passed. We'll want to go ahead and honor him and remember him and talk about his career as both a player as well as a GM. We briefly also talked about the passing of Willie Mays, which just happened today. So we wanted to go ahead and briefly honor him as well. And then we covered the finals. The finals, it's over. The congratulations to the Boston Celtics for going to be hoisting up their 18th championship banner at the Garden.
I'm jealous.
Me too, right? Yeah. And then we covered the draft preview. Twan had covered the Nuggets, the Grizzlies, the Sixers, the Knicks. I covered the Suns, Thunder, Heat, and Magic. We'll continue our pre-draft and finish our pre-draft coverage next week. We will cover six teams. Twan will be covering the Dallas Mavericks, the Nets, Brooklyn Nets, and then the Boston Celtics. And then I will cover the Utah Jazz, the New Orleans Pelicans, as well as the Washington Wizards. This is Buzzer Beaters. You can find us at gremlinsmedia.com, Rumble, YouTube, under the profile Gremlins Media, as well as your traditional podcast outlets, such as Spotify, Google, Apple, and Pandora.
It's getting late.
I know. You can also find us on Facebook and X, formerly known as Twitter. Tuan, another great show. We definitely went big time overtime, man, but we had a lot of good content here. Hopefully our audience stays with us and listens to this over time because we definitely covered a lot of good content.
Not doing chunks, people.
Right, doing in chunks, man. So anyway, this is Buzzer Beaters. This is Eddie Aparicio and this is Anthony Tuan Corral. We're signing off.